From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña with your state and local news update. State health officials say some 26,000 doses of a second new COVID-19 vaccine arrived in Alaska today. The Food and Drug Administration granted emergency use authorization to Moderna on Friday for this vaccine. People aged 18 and up can get it. State health officials say it's being distributed this week in Alaska. The Moderna vaccine has at least one big advantage over the Pfizer vaccine that started rolling out in Alaska last week, and that's logistics. Pfizer's must be held at extremely cold temperatures that regular freezers can't reach to prevent spoiling. That happened last week to Ketchikan's first vaccine shipment. After thawing, Pfizer's vaccine can only be kept at refrigerator temperatures for a few days. Moderna's vaccine is stable at -4 degrees Fahrenheit and is okay in refrigerators for up to 30 days. Otherwise, the two vaccines share a lot of characteristics. Both require two doses. The second dose of Moderna's vaccine is supposed to be given 4 weeks after the first. Pfizer and Moderna's vaccines are not interchangeable. In Moderna's clinical trial, common reactions include fatigue, muscle pain or soreness, headache, chills, and fever. Out of the 15,000-plus people who got the vaccine in the trial, no one had a severe allergic reaction. State health officials know of 11 possible allergic reactions to the Pfizer vaccine in Alaska, 8 at Bartlett Regional Hospital here in Juneau, 2 at Providence Alaska Medical Center in Anchorage, and 1 at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. The reactions were flagged during the observation period after injection. The state says all of the patient's symptoms went away, and they're all okay. State health officials say at least 5,600 doses of the Pfizer vaccine have been administered in the state as of Sunday. The supply of both vaccines is limited. Frontline hospital workers and long-term care facility residents and staff are at the front of the line, followed by EMS personnel and healthcare professionals more generally. A state committee of mostly healthcare professionals is fine-tuning advice from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention about who should be vaccinated when. In other news, scientists are on the lookout for an invasive crab species expected to move north into Alaskan waters. This year in southeast Alaska, they added a new tool to the monitoring effort for European green crab, a threat to the state's shellfish and salmon. Joe Vicknicki reports.
European green crab or shore crab have been expanding their range northward along the Pacific coast, but this year they were discovered just south of the Alaskan border.
This Haida Gwaii occurrence last summer put some very close to us, and I really wish I could say we don't expect them, but prudence dictates that we say yes. We think it's a matter of when, not if.
That's Linda Shaw, invasive species coordinator for the Alaska Regional Office of NOAA Fisheries. In July, natural resources managers found male and female adult green crab in Haida Gwaii, formerly called the Queen Charlotte Islands. The species is native to northern Europe, but has expanded its range into North and South America, Africa, Asia, and Australia. Crab were first found on the east coast of the U.S. in 1817 and the west coast in San Francisco in the 1980s. Initially, they may have been transported in ship ballast or by other human means, but some of the northward expansion in the Pacific may be by drifting young crab on ocean currents. Shaw says this animal ranks highly on the list of invasive threats for Alaska.
They're one of the top, at least marine invasive species that we're concerned about, and we've been tracking them for many years because they've been on the West Coast already. They're in Oregon and Washington and have been moving up the coast of British Columbia.
On the East Coast, these crab are known as aggressive eaters, and the hardy crustaceans have meant millions of dollars lost in fisheries for clams, mussels, and scallops. Crab are destructive to eelgrass beds, which are important to young fish. They're also known to eat juvenile salmon and could compete with native Dungeness crab. These green crab have expanded their range northward during times of warmer water conditions from El Nino events. Scientific models also predict warmer water from climate change could help the spread of the species. The typical way to monitor for this invader is using fish traps in targeted spots. But this past year, Shaw and Alaska Sea Grant fellow Meredith Pocart came up with a plan to combine trapping and water sampling in multiple spots. The water testing could produce environmental DNA left behind by the crab in skin, shell, or excrement. Scientists describe this eDNA, as it's called, as a biological fingerprint. Shaw says it's a relatively new method that seems well-suited to monitoring for invasive species.
So maybe we have a broader net to cast, but just collecting the water samples, which are filtered down, and then that eDNA is analyzed for the potential presence of that organism.
That wider net helps on Alaska's expansive coastline, but the plans for the expanded monitoring were derailed by travel restrictions from the global pandemic. Instead, other scientists working at Little Port Walter on southern Baranof Island, south of Sitka, obtained the testing equipment and took the first water samples for green crab. Results aren't back from that testing yet, and Shaw cautions even if DNA is detected, follow-up trapping is still needed to confirm the presence of the species in Alaska. The scientists also secured funding to work with the Metlakatla Indian community to join in the monitoring effort.
They are positioned ideally down there on Annette Island, close to our southern southeast Alaska border, to be able to intercept green crab that might be coming north towards Alaska. And they were very interested in this project.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game provided the fish traps sent to Metlakatla and set in several spots this year. No crab turned up there or in traps set at Little Port Walter. The eDNA water sampling could start up in Metlakatla in 2021, and scientists may look to add other spots. They plan a full sampling season next April through September. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicky.
An Alaska-based theater company is putting a Tlingit twist on a holiday classic. KNBA's Trip Krause reports.
At Christmas time, we bring you in for herring eggs. You are our friend.
From the opening carol, viewers will notice a particular Southeast Alaska flavor to a Tlingit Christmas carol. Vera Starbard is a playwright in residence for Perseverance Theater and adapted the story.
If you enjoy a Christmas carol like I do, you'll recognize the story. Like, it definitely, plot-wise, has a lot of the same beats. Obviously not exactly the same, but you'll definitely recognize the story.
The production will be in five roughly 20-minute episodes, or staves, live-streamed through Perseverance Theater's Facebook page and YouTube channel. After each stave is finished, it will be made available to rewatch until Russian Orthodox Christmas on January 7th. As the first stave begins, viewers and theater patrons will recognize the story. Scrooge is a successful CEO of a Native Corporation subsidiary in an unnamed town. He's also a boarding school survivor, though Starbird says that element is intentionally subtle.
So I didn't want to sort of obsess on that, because I think that ultimately I didn't experience that, and I don't have the right to tell you that story without someone who's been there. But I did want to allow a look into that and a look into why our Scrooge is the way he is.
And Scrooge hates Christmas, even when his niece, Frida, invites him over to celebrate Russian Orthodox Christmas.
And you think some exhausting event made for a made-up holiday filled with half the miserable people in this miserable community is where I'd like to be?
Fair point, but I'd still love to see you there.
Humbug.
The character of E.B. Scrooge is played by Ed Littlefield, who's Tlingit and serves as a music director as well, Starbird says.
He's a wonderful Tlingit musician who just makes this absolute magic. The songs start out actually very sort of Western Christmas. And the further you get into the stave, there are more Tlingit, and there's more Tlingit language, and there's more Tlingit sounding drums and rattles. You'll hear some deer rattles in there. It's just such a magical thing to hear sort of these familiar noises in a new kind of medium.
The production's critically acclaimed stage director, Madeline Syette, is Mohegan. The largely native cast and crew includes representatives from a variety of tribes and nations. including Yupik, Inupiaq, Osage, Métis Cree, and more.
And we're all bringing our culture and our values into how we're creating this in the first place. And yes, that's reflected in the story itself as an Indigenous person who wrote it, but you see it in the acting and the choices that are made for the music.
Juneau-based Perseverance offers performances in Juneau and Anchorage, and in the time of coronavirus, virtually. Starbird says the theater industry largely shuttered nationwide to prevent the possibility of spreading COVID-19. The shutdown left a lot of theater artists and writers out of work, but it also sparked a boom in online productions.
Because we're not going to stop creating. We're not going to stop putting out art. And it's been difficult for some people to sort of be in this very stressful pandemic era, but also be creating art.
Starbird says going virtual opened up more opportunities to connect with other artists, as well as offering productions to remote villages.
That was Trip Krause in Anchorage, and you're listening to KTOO News.